Okay, just preparing for this Easter service. It's always hard to figure out what you want to say. What's the most important thing to say on Easter? And so I found myself thinking of one of my favorite people in a movie from my favorite movie growing up, and that movie was called Braveheart. Has anyone heard of Braveheart? Braveheart was a, what did you say? Aye, yeah, exactly. He's on it too. He is risen? He is risen indeed. I thought back to this moment in Braveheart, and Braveheart was this Scottish guy who fought for freedom. That was his whole life. I mean, he got to this place, he wanted freedom from England, and so that was their whole purpose. That was everything that they did. He started gathering people. They were fighting for freedom. They wanted that so bad. And eventually, he got in some trouble. There was a traitor involved. All of a sudden, he was in prison, and he was going to be killed, tortured and killed the next day. Pretty crazy scene. And there he is waiting in the holding cell, knowing that that was coming the next day. And this princess who had taken a liking to him came into that cell. And she begged him. She said, "Would you just please beg for mercy? Would you just please say to the King of England, would you just say, I'm sorry, beg for mercy, ask for it, because maybe they won't torture you, and who knows, maybe they'll even put you in a tower and let you live in a tower for the rest of your life." That's what she says. And William Wallace looks at her, and you can imagine a guy like this, a fiery guy like this, thinking about living in the tower for the rest of his life. How exciting is that, right? And so he sort of just looks at her, and I mean, he likes her, she's cool, but he says to her, "Everyone dies, not everyone truly lives." As everyone dies, but not everyone truly lives. See, him going and living in a tower isn't living. It's not about preserving, elongating the time that you don't die. It was all about, for him, truly living a life worth something, living a life that had some value and was worth talking about after. And when I grew up and learned about Christianity, I kind of thought the same way that princess thought. I kind of thought when I was a kid, when my parents talked to me or my mom talked to me about Christianity, and you know, I wanted Jesus, and I wanted him I wanted to love him and all of these things. I wanted him to live in my heart. I wanted him to forgive my sins and all of those, but I really thought that the idea of Christianity was about not dying. So once I have Christianity, once I believe in Jesus, then I won't die. I didn't quite get it when I was a kid. I'll die a physical death, but not a spiritual death. I don't really understand, but it's so nice. I won't die at that point. It'll be really, really great, and I don't know what that means, but at least I won't die. Well, the Bible doesn't talk about just that we're not supposed to die. In John 10:10, it says, "The thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. But I," Jesus says, "but I have come that you may have life. And life to the full." That you may have life and that you may have it to the full. He doesn't just come and say, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. I come to let you not be stolen from and let you not be destroyed. No, I came so you'd have life, not just not death. I came that you'd have life. I came that you'd have a full existence, that you would have purpose, that you would know what you're worth, that you would have the fullness of life. I came for that. There's a lot of different ideas of what a full life looks like. When we say life to the full, a lot of people go in a lot of different directions. Sometimes we think life to the full would be when I get that promotion at work, when I get a certain amount of money at my job. Then once I get that, it'll be good, and I get the money and you carry on for a while, and it sort of leaves you empty a little bit. When I was in high school, I remember the full life was when you got your license. And then when you got your license, you could go out and get to all the parties and get away from your parents and go and do all that. Then it'll be the full life. I'll get a job during the week, and then I can go spend all my money on things that don't last on the weekend, and that will be the most full life I could have. And they come back, and everyone's tired and worn out after a weekend of hard partying, and say, "Yeah, I'm done." By Wednesday, they're like, "Let's do it again. It's going to be the best. This is the full life," right? And soon you realize that full life leaves you empty. You know, maybe it's marriage, maybe it's whatever it is, that we just think something else. There's some kind of step somewhere along the way. If I just get that next thing, I will be fulfilled. I will be living the full life. That's how I'm going to do it. Sometimes we think the full life, us religious people can think the full life, is once I follow all of these steps and all of these rules, well, this life isn't actually supposed to be about fullness. It's about me getting the reward after life, and that's it. You know, as long as I follow all these rules, even though I don't like living this way and I don't feel like I'm doing anything good for anyone else, I just think that as long as I do all of these steps and do all of these things, then I'll be good somewhere down the road. Jesus said, I didn't come just to save you from death. I came to give you life and life to the full. The Bible's pretty clear that life, the full life, is not a process, it's a person. Jesus Christ is that person. In John 14:6, Jesus is talking to his disciples and they're chatting about when Jesus dies. He talked a few times about when he was going to die, and he says, this is what it's going to look like. I'm going to die and then I'm going to rise 3 days later. And he told them all of this all of the time. Every single time they said, no, we can't. We don't want that to happen. We wish you, you know, all of the, it always happened that way. And he said, no, it's going to happen. I'm going to die. But don't worry, I'm going to go to the Father, he says this one time. I'm going to go to the Father, and I'm going to prepare you a room. I'm going to get it all ready. I'm going to make it all nice. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to bring you there. But don't worry, because you know the way, he says. And Thomas chimes in and says, Jesus, I don't know the way. I don't know the way. You didn't tell us the way. I need to know the way. And Jesus looks at him and says, Thomas, shh. And John 14:6 says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus says he is the way. Jesus says he is the life. He promises that he is the life. It's not life comes once you do these things. He just says, I am life. It's not life that happens once you've filled out all these spots and checked off all these boxes, then you can experience life. Or once you die, then you can know everlasting life. Jesus says, I am the life. If you have me, you have life. I am life. He says, if you want to know what everlasting life is like, just be in relationship with me. That's what he says to Thomas. Then they say, okay, I get it. And then he starts talking about the Father. He says, if you want to know the Father, if you want to know God, if you want to know the real God, the God that we've talked about, that the Israelites have had all throughout history, if you want to know that God, yeah, it's awesome. You know the way. And they say, no, how do we know that God? He says, wait, if you know me, you know that God. If you know me, I'm Jesus. If you know me, you know the Father, because the Father is in me and I am in the Father. And they say, oh, okay. And then Jesus finishes off this time with those disciples and says, by the way, all these things that you've seen me doing, all the stuff that I've been up to, all the miracles that you've seen, all the great things that have happened around us, you know, all those healings we saw, the walking on water we saw, the feeding of the 5,000 we saw, all of those special things. I want to tell you, disciples, that if you would just come to me, if you would come and be part of what I'm doing, if you would be in relationship with me, you will do greater things than these. I love that Jesus says that. There's no other, religious leader who's able to say, I am the life. Who's able to say, I am the way. They all say, this is a way. This is the way. Here's how you walk. Here's what you should do. And if you do it, you'll be rewarded after. And Jesus says, not only am I the way and the life, but right now I want to give you a life that's going to be so special, so different than what you could have lived on your own. I want to give you something that doesn't have to get bogged down by depression and anxiety and fear and terrorism. I want to give you a life that is beyond those things. I want to give you a life that excels beyond those things, that actually in this world doesn't just avoid all these situations, but can go into these situations and bring life and bring joy and bring happiness and bring peace. That's what I want to give to you, disciples. And all of a sudden, they're shaking their head. Yeah, I want that. But if Jesus was going to promise life, he first had to overcome death. As we know, I don't know about you, but I know that sometimes I can turn on the news and we see all the stories of death and all the stories of fear and all the stories of hatred and all of that, and it can wear us out and burden us. We need a Savior who conquered that. We need someone who says, that's done. You don't have to dwell on that. You don't have to take all your time right there. I've given you life. And so when that's all pounding in on you, I want you to know something. When the world was pounding in on me, and I broke open that grave, I broke open that tomb, and I let the light shine out into the world, and I have the same power for you, because the same power that was in me to rise me from the dead is now in you. That's what Jesus says. That's what he says to us. One of the most special occasions in Scripture is actually when Jesus was conquering death on the cross. He said he had to go. Jesus said he had to go to the cross so he could conquer sin. And the idea is he took the whole weight of all sin, laid it on his shoulders, and on those shoulders he went to the cross, and the wrath of God was on him, and it died with him so that he rose and with new life that didn't have sin and didn't have death attached to it. But on that cross, there was a special moment where a criminal hung beside him. And notice something special about Jesus. I want to talk to you about that in Luke 23, 32 to 43. Two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. This is the moment when Jesus has now been betrayed. He's been mocked. He's been spit on, punched, done all of those things. He's been whipped, and now he's carrying his cross through town. He gets it all the way out to this place, and there's two other with him. When they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him there along with the criminals, one on his right and the other on his left. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." Pretty amazing statement, that one. Jesus is sitting, hanging on a cross. He's stuck on the cross. He's been abused, and he's there exposed to everyone. And there he is saying, "Father, forgive all these people. Forgive all these people." Why? Because death wasn't consuming him. He was actually killing death. And when he was killing death, it meant that even in death, he could be light. Even in death, he could be life. And even on the cross, he's saying, "There's something for these people. And Father, they're confused, but I just know there's something special. I know that you have forgiveness for them. I know you want to walk with them. I know you want to give them life too." So he says, "Father, forgive them. They do not know what they're doing." And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. So they're sitting there, all of these people are sitting there playing games to figure out who gets Jesus' clothes, and he's on the cross praying for their forgiveness. The people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, "He saved others, let him save himself." These are the religious leaders of the time. And they're saying, "He needs to save himself." Now, what they thought of as saving himself was coming down and living a little bit more existence on this planet before he died. And Jesus is sitting there thinking, "If I save myself and come and live on this planet a little longer and die a little longer, little later, then I'll never save the entire world. And I'm here to save the world. I'm here to save everyone. I'm going to hang on this cross until death is defeated. I'm going to hang on this cross until sin has no hold on any other person. I'm going to hang on this cross until no one has to feel shame if they don't want to. Until no one has to feel the weight of sin. Until no one has to be separated eternally from God. I'm going to hang on this cross until it is finished. And when it is, God's going to raise me up, and I'm going to give life for the rest of eternity to those who want it." This is what Jesus said. This is what he was doing. And so they said, "Hey, come on down, save yourself." And Jesus goes, "No, I'll just save the world instead." If he is God's Messiah, the chosen one, the soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine, vinegar, and said, "If you're the King of Jews, save yourself. Come on, if you're so powerful, save yourself." Reality is, Jesus came in weakness. The cross wasn't power in itself. The cross was a sign of defeat. Jesus was being defeated on that cross in that moment, but it was the sin that Jesus took on that died with him in that moment. He didn't bring himself down because he needed to accomplish something. One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. And in a different gospel, actually, it says both of the criminals were yelling at him at first. He says, "Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us." So this guy's looking for a free ticket off this cross himself. Maybe he's even hoping that he is something powerful. Hey, go get those angel friends. Pull out your nails. Pull out mine. We can go have dinner and call it a day. You know, I don't know what this criminal's thinking, but he's like, pull yourself down. Let's get out of here. We're done. Come on. If you're so strong, get yourself down. Let's go. Let's be saved. Let's go live a little longer in this life. But the other criminal rebuked him. Weird. Rebuked means basically shut him up. Basically means what you're saying, I want you to stop saying it because it's wrong. I need to tell you that you're not saying the right thing. This criminal who lived a life of crime, they don't put normal like average criminals on these crosses. They put people who have charges of treason, who are against the government, who are terrorists, who the worst of the worst. They put those people on these crosses. And here he is, a life of crime, a life of doing the wrong thing. And here he is. And he actually shuts the other criminal up and says, wait a sec. Might be something to this. There might be something going on here. Says he rebuked him, said, don't you fear God? Since you are under the same sentence, we are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong. I sort of think God was whispering to that criminal that day. Isn't it amazing that the loudest preacher for Jesus Christ on the day of his death was the criminal hanging beside him on the cross? None of his disciples were talking up. All of his disciples were hiding away, running away, and this criminal who's got nothing left to lose is standing there saying, I can't lose anything, and so I'm going to throw myself at the only thing that maybe is going to be life, the only thing that maybe gives me a chance, the only thing that might be worth something, because at this point I have no other option. I'm hopeless. So I'm just going to, I don't know, maybe I'll talk to this guy. Maybe he's got something for me. What could he have hoped for, right? He wasn't hoping for a great life. That was done. He's pinned to a tree. He's pinned to wood. He's not going to climb on down. Jesus, hey, let's go, you know, buy a house together on the beach or something like that. He's pinned to the cross. He says, there might be something about this Jesus guy. Might be something going on here. There might be something that we're not getting. There might be something that these Romans don't get, that these religious leaders don't get, that this other criminal don't get. Everyone is coming against Jesus. Everyone is mocking him. Everyone is turning on him. And this criminal who's lived a life of crime says, maybe there's some kind of hope in this guy. Isn't it amazing that even when the most religious people can't see the life of Jesus, those who have no hope for anything else can see it? Easter is about Jesus reaching out his hands and accepting anyone who wants to come to him and receive what he offers. Easter is about him dying to killing death and dying to sin so that he could rise up with anyone who wanted to have their sin and their death die as well. And he holds his hands out and chats with this guy over here. The guy says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Somehow he knows about another kingdom that Jesus is going to be a part of. He says, will you remember me when you go to that kingdom? Worship team, you can come up. Jesus answered him, truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. As long as you start to live a better life. No, it doesn't say that. As long as you get yourself off this tree and go figure out how to make up for everything. It doesn't say that. Jesus doesn't say, I don't mind bringing you along as long as you can show me how you're going to help this whole thing. Show me your value. Show me what you got to offer this, because we got a bit of a movement going here, and we're going to figure out how to take down the Romans. So if you want to come with me, you can, but you got to show me what you can do. No, Jesus looks over at him and says, if you want it, you got it. My arms are out here not because just because I'm hung on the cross. My arms are out here because I will receive you if you want it. I will give you life if you want life. I will break off the binding power of sin in your life if you want it. I am here. I'm open, I'm vulnerable to say, whoever wants it, come and get it. And here's this criminal who can't offer anything to Jesus. He's staring at Jesus. Both of them, you know, bruised and bloody. And he says, Jesus, something's going on here and I don't get it. And there's good reason for us to believe, based on what Scripture shows us, that this guy was originally mocking Jesus as well, and something happens in the process that all of a sudden he's looking over and saying, there's just a hope in you that I don't have on my own. There's just a life in you that I don't have in my own. And when he's thinking about the full life, there's nothing that can change about his life. He's got a couple hours and he's going to die. That's it. And yet he still thinks it's important to go to Jesus. It's because Jesus has more life than what this world could give us. He has more to life than what we've often thought life is all about. His life is more fulfilling, and it's eternal, but it's also present. He gives us his life for the future, but he gives us his life for now. He gives us his hope for someday down the road. He gives us his hope and peace and his love and his joy for right now. So this guy was just as smart as anyone else to say, I've only got a couple hours to live, but I want to make things right with Jesus. I want to know you, Jesus. I want to follow you. And how do you make things right with Jesus? You just go to him. Jesus has already done the work. Jesus has already done everything. He's shown how to live the fulfilling life, the fulfilled life he wants to do. He's already done everything. He's not saying, now you have to work all of these steps out so that you can make it. Jesus worked all the steps out. He did all of the things. He took all the steps. He got broken. He got beat. He got all of these things. He broke off sin. If we say that we still have to work for it, then we don't understand it. Because here's a criminal saying, can I have it, Jesus? And I can't do a single thing. I can't even apologize to anyone because my family who hates me isn't here to watch me dying on this tree. My family who I broke, all the people that I messed up, I can't even ask them to forgive me because no one's here because I'm so hated. And in that situation, Jesus says, I'll see you in paradise. I'll see you in paradise. Today. He says, today I want to see you in paradise. You're coming with me. You're coming with me. Why? Because you want to. Because you want to. This guy had nothing to offer. That's what Easter's all about. For those of you who feel like you have something to offer Jesus, give it to him. But it'll never compare to what he can do for you. Those of you who feel like you have nothing to offer Jesus, You haven't lived the right life. You're not living the right life. Either you've never known about Jesus and you never cared, or maybe you've been a Christian for a long time and you've just never really tried to live your life that way. It's just sort of, whatever, I'll do some good things here and there. I'll read my Bible here and there. I'll go to church here and there, and I'll do those things and that should be good enough. And Jesus said, no. Your good enough is not good enough. You just need to come to me on the cross. I'll put your sin to death and I'll give you new life. That's what Easter's all about for us as Christians. The full recognition that we're nowhere near good enough. The full recognition that we don't have anything like the right stuff to make it. We don't have anything like the right process to walk. We don't have anything like the right words to say. We don't have anything like the right actions to take up. We have no way of getting to this life, this fulfilled life, other than through Jesus Christ. So when Thomas said to Jesus, I have no idea how to get there. I want to know how to get there. How do you get there? Jesus, all he said is through me. Just come to me. Just walk with me, get to know me, figure out who I am. And you will have eternal life. You will have full life. You will have the life that's meant for you. That's what we celebrate at Easter time. If today you say, I need that life, you can have it. You can have it. Just ask for it. Tell Jesus, I just want that life. And he'll say, okay, I am that life. Get to know me. I want to teach you. I want to put people in your life who can show you. I want to give you a small group that you can walk with. I want to give you some words from the Bible that you can learn. And we've got people who can start that journey with you over here that are going to go after the baptisms, and you can go and talk with them, and they'd love to lead you through prayer and just talk to you about what that journey would look like. But right now, we're going to celebrate that there are five people getting baptized today because they recognize that life. They recognize something special. And they turned to the open-armed Jesus and said, "We want what you got." And he said, "It's all yours. Come get me. Come get me." So we're just going to do one song of worship together right now. We can all stand for that if you like. These guys are going to lead us in that. Then we're going to have a testimony video and do some baptisms. So let's just worship quick.
The ashes of defeat, the resurrection.